Okay, I'm ready to begin. It's not a simple time for us. We're at a war here as usual, but this is a very difficult war.
Are we recording?
Yeah, I'm recording. And nevertheless, we have to forget everything and be mitrakeiz devar Hashem.
Can I start recording?
Yeah, turn it on.
Recording in progress.
Ah, okay. Today is Sunday, October 23rd, 2022. I want to say good vach to everybody. We last met and we got involved with the tshuva of Rav Menashe Klein. A very fascinating tshuva. And the question is very simple. It goes back about 30 years, a little bit more than 30 years. And they first beginning with the ultrasound. What's the word they use, Yomo? The other word? Which produces a sonograph, and are you allowed to do it? Should you do it? And the person asking Rav Menashe Klein says, maybe it's better not to get involved. B'kiv shei rachmana lamali, in the words of the Gemara and Chagiga and elsewhere, why do we get involved in the secrets of God? And it's not a good thing. Rav Menashe Klein begins to tshuva, ein hachinami. We shouldn't do it, then we spent the whole shir last week, he quotes the Medrash Rabbah, the Gemara in Pesachim, and in the Medrash Rabbah they say there's seven things that God hides from us, and among them, when a woman is pregnant, we don't know what she's going to give birth to. Interestingly enough, the Gemara in Pesachim does not quote giving birth, it substitutes the concept of Mashiach and Malchut, etc. And we did it all, and it's a very fascinating Medrash Rabbah. And it leaves us again with the question, why shouldn't we know? And we saw in Mefarshim that it can cause a lot of harm. Number one, it seems an open Gemara, which we quoted last week, we'll quote again, the end of Kedushin, that everyone wants a boy, no one wants a girl. All right, God forbid someone will learn his wife is pregnant with a boy, with a girl, he can tell it to abort. And we all know with China what has gone on, and it remains a serious problem until today, that there are not enough women in China for all the men who want to marry. And I told you a personal story. I don't want to mention the name. He's not alive, a very close friend of mine, but his personality had some real shortcomings. And his wife suffered. And she told me, one of the stories she told me was when she gave birth to a fourth child, until then she had two girls and one boy. And he wanted a boy. He was so angry that she had a girl, he did not visit her in the hospital. This is a true story. All right. You have to have a demented personality to act like that. But there's a lot to be said. Leave it for the end, and then you'll be happy no matter what. The child is healthy. My wife always says the main thing is the child should be healthy. Everything else is secondary. Why a boy is preferred, I trust I mentioned a month ago, but it's very simple that a man goes to work, he earns a living. Women at that time, you had to raise them, you had to protect them from vultures. If you, Mishpacha magazine can't publish pictures of women, every man is a sexual fiend, every woman can be a siren. This is that mentality. It frightens me personally, but I'm in the minority, not the majority. But a woman, then you got to provide a dowry, find a good husband. You're always worried about her. All right, nowadays, fortunately or unfortunately, the world has changed. Every woman growing up has to have a career. And I have, my own three daughters, each one has advanced degrees. And I'm very proud. My wife raised three daughters who all have advanced degrees. And not one is a feminist, so that makes me very proud. My granddaughters-in-law, I have to say, they all have advanced degrees. I have a granddaughter-in-law, two of them just got PhDs. More are studying, others are lawyers. It's unbelievable what the girls, but thank God their values are good. But fine, so Reb Menashe Klein, if he wasn't intellectually honest, would end the tshuva right here at this point and say, Ein hachinami habateich b'Hashem chesed yisovvenu, and don't get involved in trying to seek and search and know, God didn't want you to know, you'll find out when the child is born. And he could have ended tshuva right here. But here's why I love Reb Menashe Klein, and you have to understand him between the lines. He is intellectually honest. And instead of ending the tshuva here, there's much more in a world that can be discussed, particularly in the year 2023, where we are today. Avi, did I make a mistake? Absolutely not. Eisahu chacham haro'eh et hanolad. You don't open your mouth in 22 without thinking what's going to be in 23. Okay, so please don't... I see a new friendly face. Welcome. It's okay. Tell me later. And I want to welcome everyone back on the screen. I see everyone. Baruch Hashem. Welcome back. With a big smile on my face. Happy to see everyone. So, but forgive me. I have to look at the students in front of me because we do have a little crowd in the classroom. So my Benasha Klein, this intellectual honesty. Tell me, is this true that we have no right to ask questions about that which is hidden? Gemara, it's a beautiful Gemara. This is one of the Gemaras that I've dashed 100 different ways. It's a in Shabbos, Daf Lamed Amid Aleph. What was one of the seven concepts that God does not reveal to you? The day you will die. And why doesn't God reveal that? Because it's obvious, if you know your people, those of you, unfortunately, at my age, my phone calls are generally not good. You understand? When I was a kid, you got phone calls, all your friends had bar mitzvahs, all your friends got engaged, all your friends married, all your friends became fathers, all your friends became grandfathers, all your friends became great-grandfathers. And then the ranks start thinning out. So here someone just told me on Shabbos, I was told there's something in the fair, I don't go into details, but one of my grandsons, his father-in-law, is in intensive care. And they were telling me his stories about other people in the family and where they stand. And my wife told me, and this man found out he has cancer. He wants to die. Gave up life, nothing. All right, it could be. I'm no youngster. As I told you, very soon on Hanukkah, I become closer to 90 than to 80. V'hamevin yavin. But I absolutely will not celebrate. I've told you that more than once. You understand what I'm talking about? When you celebrate, Ayin Hara, I'm an old-fashioned Jew. Forget it. Keep it quiet. I've seen too many of my friends celebrate, and I don't want to go further. But if you know you're going to die, you reach the point, why should I do anything? Why? It's finished. How much life? Adkan. No, God doesn't tell you when you're going to die. You should, there's an open Gemara in that. You should do tshuvas if you're going to die a minute from now. But outside of doing tshuva, produce and do and continue and create. Baruch Hashem. What's your problem, Yomo?
Was Moshe Rabbeinu an exception?
Meaning?
Hashem revealed to him when he's going to die.
Well, no.
He told him he's going
to
die.
No, with Moshe Rabbeinu, I see the Rav in front of me, the outside chair, it had to be the mid-50s. Ugh. You see, Moshe Rabbeinu wanted to enter Israel. You're sitting here in Yerushalayim. Who the heck are you compared to Moshe Rabbeinu? Who am I compared to Moshe Rabbeinu, even though you think I'm a big shot? I cannot tell you what he said to me the other day. We'll leave it at that.
Only because Rabbi said
it himself. I told a joke about a guy in Borough Park. What does it have to do with me? And you had no right to repeat the joke. What I told you, whatever you hear in the office, you can't repeat. You forget it. But all right, Avi, let it be. So, but Moshe Rabbeinu is the greatest Jew who ever lived. Lo kam kamoshad. So what God wanted to do at the end of his life, he showed him Eretz Yisrael. That's the end, the final parshiyot, the Zohar Bracha, right at the end. See it all. You will not be there, but this is the history. And the Rav dramatized that. They say he was talking about his father. His father is Rav Moshe Soloveitchik. And the Rav spoke about Moshe Rabbeinu, the tragedy of death, that you can't fulfill your desires. He saw it, but you can't live that long. The Jews have to go through so much up and down, success, defeat, challenge, recall, and then Moshe dies. He saw it all, he saw the land, and then God says, now we've made a compromise. You've seen, you're not there, but you've experienced time to leave the world. So that's the answer. And the Rev cried, he broke down and cried. And I don't have to tell you, a few thousand people cried with him. And we said afterwards, you know, after the shiur, when we were gossiping among ourselves, we said afterwards that the Rav was not just talking about Moshe Rabbeinu, he was talking about Rav Moshe Soloveitchik. His father was the outside shiur for his father. And you have to remember, his father died very suddenly. January 31st, 1941. Dr. Revel died December 2nd, 1940, and less than 2 months later, Rav Moshe died. Dr. Revel was ill. Dr. Revel, by the way, was younger than Rav Moshe. He was 55 when he died, but he had carried the yeshiva through the Depression, and now the Hitler period, and everyone bothering get us visas to America. You have no idea the pressure on Rabbi Dov Revel, my cousin, and he died. He had heart trouble. But Rav Moshe was seemingly healthy and seemingly fine. And here, Rav Moshe suddenly died, and yeshiva was left in a tremendous quandary, which we can talk about some other time. Now, it's an open Gemara. Who wants to know when he's going to die? David HaMelech. David HaMelech, Ne'im Zmirat Yisrael. This is the open Gemara. And it's based upon, they're quoting the Pasuk, Ki Lakelef Chai Hu Tov Min Ha Aryei Hamet. That Shlomo HaMelech in Kohelet, Kelef Chai, that a dog is better than a dead lion. He's alive. The lion is dead. David HaMelech, and the pasuk David HaMelech, Hodieni Hashem Kitsi Yumidat Yumai Mahi Eda Machadal Ani. Let me know what's happening to me. Follow David. Let me know when I'm going to die. Let me know when the end is near, so I can prepare. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells him, absolutely no. She'ein modiin midat yadav shel Adam. I cannot tell you. So David doesn't give up. He pleads. Tell me what day I will die. No, what day? Shabbat. Remember the Gemara? Ah, he's going to die on Shabbat. So the Gemara goes on. Every Shabbat, David HaMelech just sat and learned. He didn't waste a minute. And that way, when the Malach HaMavet came, and he was learning, couldn't interrupt, couldn't take his soul. Guy learning, all right, not wasting a minute. I'm a bad Jew, you should know, because I'm much happier learning than I am davening. I understand this. I don't want to tell you we made a special minyan second year now, Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, Simchas Torah, and I don't know. You finish davening early, what do you do the rest of the day? I'm the happiest guy alive. I was able to do two daven, you know, Gemara, etc. Okay. David HaMelech is learning. The Malach can't touch him. What does the Malach do? He doesn't give up so easily. Hi, halavai, we had a way to defeat the Malach. He doesn't give up so easily. He goes outside and he wrestles the trees outside the palace. David HaMelech goes out to see what happened, and in that moment the Malach grabs him. So, but what do you see from this Gemara? You see an open Gemara where you have a right to question, to learn normal, decent human behavior. Let me know when the end is near. So if this is the case, the Medrash Rabbah that we quoted a month ago, all right, it's a Medrash Rabbah. We don't pass them from Agada. Agada is very fascinating. Yes, I gave a view. I hope it was a nice shiur. I got compliments on it from across the world. Yeah, there's something not knowing the tension of life, the challenge of life. Imagine if you come in Aliyah, I came 1969, unwanted, unsought, uncalled for. If someone would tell me that so many years later, politicians would be running after me. I have a daughter, the chief rabbis be running after my daughter, our position, our influence. What kind of life is this? Better to come and nobody or nothing and fight and struggle and challenge and work your way up the ladder. What do you think? I don't know. That's the Medrash Rabbah. But I don't want to say it's halacha lemaisa. And this Gemara shows you, why are we opposed to a sonogram? Why are we opposed to an ultrasound? We want to know. And there can be many good reasons. The simplest reason of all. If you know it's a boy, you can prepare for a brit. You can prepare a shalom zacha. You can prepare a pidyon haben. If it's a girl, all right, there are different considerations. Make a kiddush. When will you name the girls? Monday, Thursday, Shabbos. Fine, prepare, think. Buy clothes, what do you buy? And very important to buy blue or pink, particularly in this world. Today, we don't want to buy unisex. Put a bow, I see my great-granddaughters all have bows in their hair. I am very happy to see the sight. Okay, let me not elaborate. So, Reb Menashe Klein here is quoting a powerful Gemara. And a Gemara that takes precedence over the Medrash Rabbah. And maybe what the Medrash means, that we have a right to find that on our own. It's just God doesn't tell us. He lets us struggle, lets us try to search, to find. But you do it. Rak lo shahodi. Einu mene shamayim. And he says, Gam b'diyuk lashon ha-medrash, Ein adam yodeya ma ba'ibra shel isha. That a man doesn't know what his wife is carrying, but it may very well be that a man doesn't know, but the woman knows. And here we come, Reb Menashe Klein, I stand in awe. And this is what I referred to a month ago. Lo leim li, I come from a different world. And in our world, there was a limit to how we spoke about sex in public. A certain diffidence. What I would call in modern Hebrew, tzniut. And yet, in the world today, sex, every kid from 12, 13 and up, knows more than I knew when I got married. It's a question of the world in which you're raised. And we see from the Gemara, and this is what I call the Rabbi Lichtenstein, should we write about it? Should we talk about it? And then I read to you from Rabbi's article in Tradition that Reb Aaron was very diffident. He says there is a concept of tzniut, but in our generation, I have to wave the concept and speak head on. And I'm going to quote now from Reb Menashe Klein. I'm going to quote some Gemaras that I apologize for quoting in public, but nevertheless, Torah hi l'modna anitzarech. So a man doesn't know, but a woman may certainly know. And here, let me give another introductory thought, and I'll quote the Gemara to you in depth. We are a very unique religion. There are certain aspects of Torah, Judaism, Yahadut, call it what you wish, that no other religion has. To give you the most basic example of all, we've grown up in a democracy, Western democracy. I grew up in New York, Atlanta, you have democracy. This is the great American dream. In a democracy, the individual, when you come to religion, religion is the individual. It has nothing to do with the public thoroughfare. You have freedom of choice. You can be a Jew, a Christian, a Protestant, a Catholic, a Buddhist, endless freedom of choice. But it's an individual religion. What do I mean by this? There's a volume written that I consider the most important work I've written. It's a memoir. It's entitled From Washington Avenue to Washington Street. In that volume, I tell you a story that happened to me in 1944. And that story changed my life. That's why I'm sitting here. And the story is very simple. Those of you who have read about 44, the whole American world was talking about the invasion that's going to take place of France, Germany, etc., Normandy. Everyone knew there'd be an invasion. Germany already was weakened, and there was no way to defeat Hitler without a massive, massive invasion that took tens of thousands of lives. And they chose Normandy, and everyone was talking. Remember, my father had a map that he got from radio station WOR. And remember, my father could see at the news at night, he'd be looking at the map and tracing the lines of the Allies. My father was never drafted in World War II because he already had two children. But all my uncles were in the army. They were younger. But everyone, it's America, World War II, Nazis. So we come into the day school, the only day school in the Bronx, Yeshivat Rabbeinu Yisrael Solanta, that my mother, Zichrona Levracha, was smart enough to take me out of public school after 1 year, sends me to Solanta. And our Rebbe walks in that morning, and he sees, you know, we're all talking about the war, about America, Germany, and he looks at us and says, you're all excited about the war, you look at me, you think I'm an old man? Let me tell you what happened to me in World War I. And he tells the following story, not realizing that at least my life would be totally changed. He says he was 17 years old, he was on the front line for Russia fighting the Germans. He had his friend from Moscow that he grew up with next to him, another Russian Jew. And the friend shot a German soldier. And the German soldier dropped his gun and with his last strength shouted, Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad. And with that he died. His friend went out of his mind, was in a Russian field hospital, and committed suicide 2 days later, that a Jew killed a Jew. Tell me, who else tells this story? It's a very great Jew in Israel that just celebrated his 70th birthday. You don't live that far from him. Rabbi Chaim Sabato. Heard the name? Great Talmud Chacham, a great author. A great author. All right, he doesn't, it's not scholarship like I've been privileged to publish, but he's the top writer in Israel. He's unbelievable. Based upon truth, whatever he writes is autobiographical, but it's written like a novel, basically. So he writes how he came to Israel, where he grew up in Kiryat Yovel, and he writes about this man in shul who was always silent. There was a certain torture within his personality, and he never understood it. And finally, he heard the secret that he had been in the Hungarian army, and he shot, I believe it was a Russian Jew, and killed him in World War I. The Jew killed the Jew. He never got over it. I wrote to Chaim Sabato when I read this. I said, I sent him, at that point, Washington wasn't published, but I had already the manuscript. I sent him my manuscript. I said, both of us have the same story. It happened more than once. Now, let me ask you a question. Russia just declared war on the Ukraine. Slavic people are fighting Slavic people. Russian Orthodox are fighting Russian Orthodox. Protestants are fighting Protestants. Catholics are fighting Catholics. They don't give a darn. Religion ends. That's your religion. Nothing to do beyond you. We Jews have a totally different concept. We are individual Jews, and we're Jews on a public nature. We are part of Kahal Yisrael, Adat Yisrael, B'nai Yisrael. We rejoice in Kibbutz Goliath. What is it all about? That so many different Jews from so many different countries, from so many different languages, are coming home. More than that, I'll tell you another story. What's your first name?
Mike.
Mike, I'll tell you another story that happened to me right before Corona. I was scholar in residence in Riverdale. And there's an organization, we were hosted by very important people doing a lot of good Torah charity work. And there's an organization called Footsteps. And they try to bring back, I think you know that in the Hasidic community, there's a lot of rebellion. When you raise boys and girls and you tell them the whole world is treif and nothing is good and Israel's not good, it's a whole world of rebellion. Many of them throw the baby out with the bathwater. I have endless letters thanking me for keeping them Torah from, they left the Haredi world, but they found they can be Haredim L'dvach Hashem and be part of the YU, the OU wonderful world that is much more open. So that Shabbat they had a girl who was raised in Bells, and she threw it all away, and this organization is trying to show her you don't have to hate God and hate Torah to be out of the ghetto. And we have an affinity for Bells because my wife comes from a Bells of family. Her great-great-grandfather was the Shliach Tzibur for the Sashalom, for the first Bells of Rebbe. Malka's named Malka, and the first Bells of Rebbe, Rebbetzin, was named Malka. And the people were very interested in what we did in Russia. The 10 years we put in working for the Mossad. And this girl, young lady, was flabbergasted. You risked your lives for Russians? We said, yes, we risked our lives for Russian Jews. She said, in all her years in Bells, there was never a concept of Am Yisrael. Just the Rebbe, this is what she got out of it. She was flabbergasted. And we looked at her. We were shocked. No concept? No, can't understand. You can say, listen, you know, I can't go into detail now, but Malka and I sent more than 200 people to Russia. We kept the chain going for 10 years. It was not easy to find candidates. And sometimes I approached people and they said we were too frightened. All right, I can understand that, perhaps. Rabbi Miller couldn't go, David Miller. I wanted him to go, but he was worried Stiffer's father had a high profile, the head of the Russian Jewry, you know, the organizations in America, head of the President's Conference. So I can understand. But to say you're not even in, how could you risk it? This is a shaya. Halavai, we could get into the Warsaw Ghetto and save you. So you see, this is one big difference between Torah and Catholics, Protestants, Buddhists. They kill each other. France and Germany have fought so many wars over Alsace-Lorraine. So they're all Protestants, killing Protestants.
No, France, Catholics.
Catholics killing Catholics, Protestants, no, but not entirely Catholic. There are plenty of Protestants in France, too. Germany is more Protestant than Catholic.
Yes, that makes but, sense, France.
But it doesn't enter the picture. And we Jews, I remember in 82, my unit, we were deep into Beirut. So we hit the Damour. It's right below Beirut. That's right before we hit Beirut. You don't know what's going on. We found, I think, 20 Jewish families in Damour. 20. What were they, enemies? Lebanon? Do you know within 48 hours, do you know where they were? Kfar Chabad. Within 48 hours. Security, immediately we informed. They did a security check. Who could take them? Chabad. Within 48 hours, they were in Kfar Chabad. You can check it out. It was in all the papers afterwards because it's a nice story. They could release details. This is one aspect where we're very different. There's another aspect. Sex. Sex is one of the most basic driving forces in life. I don't have to tell you. The Gemara in Sanhedrin, the Gemara in Yuma, they abolished the urge for Avodah Zarah, gone. They saw us in Eitz Ratzon, abolished the urge for sex. So many problems, so much, don't have to elaborate. Premarital sex, adulterous relationships, the divorce, endless stories from so-called from people. I can tell you they're on it to you. Husband and wife, a whole group, married people with children, they swap wives. Within a few months, they get divorced. This one married, that one married, them. And they're all from. So, they abolished sex. And no, you tell me what happened. Chickens didn't lay eggs. There was no human progress. It's a Medrash Rabbah, actually. Why should anyone marry? Where do you spend all your money? You tell me, where do you spend all your money? Your wife, your children. Who needs it? If I would keep all the money I made in my life, I'd be richer than Rockefeller, because I'd be a Malamada on the side. Follow? All right. Aye. So yes, sex, you need it. If not, you won't have children. And yet it's a real problem today. I don't have to tell you. If you read The Economist magazine, you'll see the statistics. What Europe is up against, there's no birth rate there. Russia, no birth rate. China, Israel is lionized. We have the biggest birth rate in the Western world. Baruch Hashem. The Cain Hala. But, wait a minute. So in religions, some religions look down upon sex and animal instinct to compromise with animalistic behavior. If you're a Catholic, what is one of the three vows that the clergy takes? Abstinence. You know the Catholic Church. Does it work? Of course not. They have more scandals than all the other religions put together. But that's a different story. But in theory, the layperson, sex is viewed as a sin. But, all right, without sex, there'd be no children, so it's condoned. Fine. Tell me, what is Judaism's attitude towards sex? And you see, here we have a double layer that no other religion has. Sex for the sake, truer revu, first mitzvah. But wait a minute, Sheirak Suta, the Onata, Lotigra. Onata. No, have you studied Evanesid? Do you know what Onata means? Have any idea? You have to meet your wife's sexual needs. Sexual desires. Achiv dioraita. Achiv dioraita. And wow. Now, if this is the case, you see, it's a totally different concept. And this is so important in educating the youngsters today. I have always said, and you may have said it as early as when you studied with me the first time around, don't educate to fear sex. Educate to sanctify sex. There's a big difference. I don't like the Haredi approach. Cover up pictures of women. I told you 1,000 times over, I'm still shaking from the picture of the Chafetz Chaim talking to his son. It's a famous picture with his wife standing in back. And that picture was republished in Haredi press, in the Haredi press, and the Chafetz Chaim's wife was blocked out. Whoever did that, I don't envy his Gehenna. Wow. No, every man is a sexual fiend. Every woman is a sexual siren. I mean, can you imagine raising a woman that when you walk on the street, you're enticing men? All right, there are manuvals and manuvalim in the world. But we have to live in a normal world. And I hope we've been a terror. I hope our whole lifestyle is different. Educate to sanctify sex. Yes. There's a sexual desire. There's marriage, kedushin, lashon sanctity. One man, one woman, a husband, a wife. The Gemara in Sanhedrin, Daf Chaf Bet, Ein Isha Koreit Brit Ela LaBala Sha'oseha Kli. I trust you understand what I'm saying. Fabulous. The relationship, Eshet Norim. You can't read the Gemara, it's unbelievable. A second marriage can never have that same basis that a first marriage has. Second marriage, the Gemara in Sota, Daf Bet Lamed Aleph, is a very powerful Gemara. Second marriage, Lefi Masav. You follow? When you get married the first time, you're a nobody, she's a nobody, two youngsters. But that magic feeling of attraction, of discovery, can never be repeated. The second time you marry, lo aleinu, life has to move on. You're widowed. The second time, it's a different reason. You're already lefi masav. The story that the Rav always would tell us about Rav Yitzchok Hanan Spector, I've repeated it maybe 100 times over the last 63 years, but let me repeat it again. Rav Yitzchok Hanan Spector was a young kid in Italy, a tremendous matmid. Turned 14, it was time to make a shidduch for him. So the family announced, he's up for the highest bidder, as the minhag was in those days. show a wealthy girl, they're looking for a wealthy family to support him, Essen Kest, and keep him in learning, what we call today Kollel. So this fancy young lady of 13, 14 comes, and they want to make a shidduch, but she has to look at him. Ashur l'kaddish shad sheyirena, second perek kedushin. And he's in the kitchen. They say he's in the kitchen eating. And she looks and he's eating with his fingers. Oh my gosh. She says, nish famir, not for her. Okay. 40 years later, he's widowed. Reb Yitzchak Ochanan Spechner Kovna Rav. Gon Yisrael. Avi Agunat. Rakefet spent years and wrote much and published a great deal. How he was mocked of so many Agunat. And women are lining up to marry him. And the Rav says, the one who rejected him the first time was also widowed. And she came to him and said, Rebbe, I made a mistake. Let me marry you. You'll never have a problem in the world. I have enough money for you. We'll never worry. We don't have to worry about a penny. You'll all be taken care of. And Yitzchokhanan says, and here the Rav breaks into laughter, hey, if nishkeven gut the eshtemol, binish nishgut the tsveitemol. If I wasn't good enough the first time, I'm not good enough the second time. But you see, we had a very positive attitude towards sex. Not just positive, but ona, a chiyuv. A man has to apologize to a woman if he doesn't feel one. Okay? Now, if this is the case, an unbelievable Gemara. You're talking about sex of children. The Gemara need the Daf Lamed Aleph, Amid Aleph. Tanu Rabbanon. Hayu Omrim Isha Mazrat Techila Yoledet Zacha. Ish Mazriya Techila Yoledet Mekeva. This is an unbelievable Gemara. I apologize, but I'm quoting now the not the Sansino, but Schottenstein, but Artskoll, the Artskoll Gemara. The woman emits seed first, she bears a male. If the man emits seed first, she bears a female. Do you know what that Gemara is telling you? Just think for one moment. It's telling you, if you know how to satisfy your wife, you have a son. If you don't know how to satisfy your wife, you have a girl. What a powerful Gemara. So what do you see from there? First of all, you see the man's obligation to the woman. Ona. She has the climax before you.
It says the biological fact. If this happens, then this happens.
It's a man, naturally, according to the Gemara, at the end of the condition, he wants to have sons. You want to have a son? Know how to treat your wife properly. A very positive attitude towards sex. Now, this is not something you have to work on it. Chazal knew what they were saying. You go further. The Gemara Daf Lamed Aleph from Bet. Amar Rav Katina Yecholani Lasot Kol Banai Secharim. Wow! If I could make all my children zacha, it's lucky he wanted a funikefat. But you have to master ona. Amar Rava. And that means the ability to excite your wife. It's an absolute positive attitude. You don't find this in any other religion. This is unique to Torah Hashem Tamimah. But what do we see from here? there's nothing wrong with wanting to know what the baby is going to be. There's nothing wrong with wanting to achieve a zacha and a keva. Wow. Gemarin Shabbos, Taf Kuf Yudchet, Amit Bet. Amar Rab Yossi, Chamesh Biyolot Ba'alti, Vinatati Chamisha Arazim B'Yisrael. Umani Nun. Reb Shmuel Reb Yossi, Reb Lesser Reb Yossi, Rachalafta Reb Yossi, Rababi Talis Avit Avtilash B'Reb Yossi, Rabbi Nachim B'Reb Yossi. Wow, he's boasting that he lived with his wife five times and each son born became a gadol b'Yisrael. So immediately the Gemara asked, V'meimer the Reb Yossi, Ona Lokia? What does it mean? He only lived five times? Ona, every month. Ah, the Gemara answers, five times. Ba'alti v'shaniti, the Gemara Nita. Five times I did it, as the Gemara says, and each time as a result, I had a son. So, you see, these are fabulous Gemaras. And you see, there's no shame to sex. There's nothing to be afraid about sex. But we have to establish a feeling, love, sanctity, respect. Sex is the basis of life, the basis of marriage, children, family. This is the way God made the world. Without it, where would we be? Look at the Gemara. The chicken didn't lay eggs, but sanctified. We're not animals. We're not part of this big world today where everything goes, where everyone lives together. If you're not religious, there's no concept of sex, no concept of marriage. The carnal relation simply becomes like any other physical or physiological desire. I want to eat steak, I eat steak. I want this, I do this. Torah, wow. But what do we see from all these? All these Gemaras that he quoted, you see you have a right to know boy, girl. You have a right to desire boy, girl. You have a right to do acts that may result in a boy or girl. So if this is the case, you come back to the original question. How could the Midrash Rabbah say that this is hidden from man, what your wife is carrying? Here you see men boasted. We knew exactly how we impregnated our wives. We knew exactly what the results will be. And this is here, Reb Menashe Klein, V'yimkein yadusha b'yurash elisha hirat ben. So, l'kein al-kacha tzarich lomah, da'hai mechusachu al-pi rov. Aval yesh mitziyut sheyedu v'havein. In other words, the majority don't know. The majority are not capable, of boil pamayim, etc. The majority don't know. But there will be cases where you will know. And if this is so, what's wrong with a sonogram? What's wrong with knowing in advance? And you see, he's intellectually honest. This person questioning him takes the attitude, better not to know. Hanistarat Hashem Elokeinu. But he shows him, essentially, there's nothing wrong with an ultrasound. Halacha l'maaseh in the year 2023, I would say that the ultrasound is very important, and the basic reason is that if there are problems with the embryo, today medicine is so advanced that they can actually do operations on the embryo that can correct some defects, particularly in the heart, I'm told. And Ribono Shel Olam, this is pikuach nefesh. You raise the downside that if there's the ultrasound shows certain problems, they may want to abort. Okay, you have to ask a shaila. Rabbanim, who are experts in the field, this is a consideration. And I once had a long talk with Aaron Soloveitchik. How far do we allow human emotion to affect decisions like this, birth control or abortion, where there's signs of a serious illness with the embryo? And there's no question that the mother's physical, mental state has to play a role in any decision the Rav will give. Here in Israel, we're well ahead of the game because we have organizations, PUA, that literally specialize in these type of problems. They have to give all the credit. I have a granddaughter-in-law who's a total Israeli. Just got her, one of those who just got her doctorate. Total Israeli. Ulpana graduate at Sadeket, Hungarian origins. Born in America. Her sister born in America. What was the story? Her mother explained the story to me. The grandmother actually explained it. That they came from Hungary. They survived. And they were all from Satmar, Munkacs. So one branch of the family came here. That branch became religious Zionists. The branch that went to America is Satmar, closet Zionist, I would call them. And the mother of this girl couldn't get pregnant, had problems. Her aunt in America, whose husband made it big, a big Satmar chassid with money and influence, they said, we're bringing you to America, we have a doctor here who can help you. And she went. And once she had one girl, a second time she had a second girl, the doctor said, I want you to come back a third time, I'm going to give you a boy. And the lady said, I can't take America. She's at home in Israel, not America. So she had these two daughters. Today, it's just the opposite. People come from Brooklyn to Israel to get help. We are very advanced in the field of helping people with problems of the inability to conceive or to hold on to the embryo, etc. Shaarei Tzedek, you get all, you don't realize how much credit we have to give the Israeli scene. And I've said this more than once, I've lived here 53 years, I don't remember a day without tension. So the security problems, just today, you read the news, you hear what happened Shabbos, that religious Jew who's in critical condition now, an Arab right beyond Ramat Eshkol, not far from Ramat Eshkol, must be living there, or Givat HaTzafatit, living there, it happened in Givat HaTzafatit, right near Ramat Eshkol, I'm told. But it wasn't a day without tension. The only day I remember that there was no tension was July 4th, 1976. You know what I'm talking about? Entebbe, that's when they brought them back from Entebbe. Oh, that day was a unique day. Yosef HaTzadik Mendelovich, the day he came back, that was a moment in time. If you wouldn't hear, you can't start to understand it. But Yosef HaTzadik got off the plane and he wanted to walk to Yerushalayim. He said to him, it's too far. He said, he showed them on a map. How far can it be on a map? You look, Lod Airport and Yerushalayim. And finally they convinced him, they'll take the car to the outskirts of Jerusalem. And he got off at Sakharov, what today is Sakharov Square. That's exactly where he got off. When you come up the road from Tel Aviv, although now you go underground, but if you come off the road, if you're going to that part of Yerushalayim, Sakharov Square, you see Baruch Haba, and it says And that's where he got off and he started walking. I can't go further. The radio covered it and people started joining him on the walk. By the time he reached the Kotel, there must have been 30,000 people. And it was midnight, I remember. We were all walking with him. That was a moment. Halavai. We should greet Mashiach Tzidkenu. Okay. So he sends at the end. Mihul Yetzem Hadavlaf Yanivitaiti Tzadkudavarav Bezer says, you're right. Fahanachlo la Kadish Baruch Hu Shein Hagolomo Bechesel of Arachaminu Kuratzono Hatov. V'hakol rachamimu l'tovah l'ratzon l'ifnei adon kol v'boteich b'Hashem chesed yisov v'venhu. But nevertheless, I have to say, Ma'ika Hadin, he would agree too. There's nothing wrong with the ultrasound. Excuse me. Yomo, do you remember what's happening a week from Monday? A week from Monday, I'm going to end shir early, and I'm going to interact with Joseph Tzadik Mendelovich here in this classroom, and we're going to deal with the documentary that he just put out on the attempt to hijack the plane in 1970. Okay. Now, let me just add something else, and it's a thought of my own. I don't know whether Rav Menashe Klein would agree, but I heard a thought many years ago that impressed me. Chafetz Chaim, you know, the trains were invented in his time, and even early airplanes, although it wasn't widely traveled, he died in the early 30s. So Chafetz Chaim said of Vought, why did they invent trains? Because in our time, we're not the same matmidim that we were in earlier generations. So if we had to travel on wagons drawn by horses, there'd be so much Beitul Torah. Today, at least, we get to our destination quicker. So I have to say, the sonograph or the ultrasound, it's a great advance. In our generation, we need it. In previous generations, people, they could take care of children better, and they could take care of children who were born with deformities. The Rav once said, I can't forget it, he said to us, he was talking once about, he loved the modern Hebrew literature, Shalom Aleichem, and Yid Peretz he looked up to, he would quote him with a bit of awe. And he said, Dufa Diken and Ishvashtein, you don't understand. He says, in Europe, in every town, there was a shtat, a kin who was off the wall, and the town took care of him. They had him work in a grocery and sort out potatoes, onions, whatever he could do, simple. See, in our society, I don't know if we're prepared for it. We're not willing to devote that effort. And therefore, when you know in advance you have problems, you can think, you can plan. I know children with Down syndrome, the work being done in Israel, second to none in the world, the Feuerstein Institute, second to none in the world. And at least it helps work in advance to plan, to do, to arrange, to think, to get guidance, to get psychological help. Could be our generation needs this invention much more than previous generations. All right, it's something to think about. Today we have airplanes, they're talking in terms of supersonic jets again, where you'll fly from New York to London in just a few hours. We don't have to be mebatlim min hatorah. Let me go one step further. and come back to a topic that haunts us and is very real. I want to read an email I got from someone in Lakewood. Dear Rebbe, I'm 41 with three teenagers and a 10-year-old just below them. The quandary of how to approach sexual issues with them is real. On one hand, we don't want to open their eyes more than necessary, allow them to have a degree of innocence and purity for some time. But on the other hand, today the Yetzer Hara b'arayot is not playing by any rules. It's getting worse with scandal after transgender and LGBT headlines popping up in the Jewish schools and media. This is aside from the standard exposure on TV and online, even in acceptable categories of content, which have sunken to rock bottom levels. I don't know what the correct thing is to do. Do we sink while clinging to tzniut? Or do we fight back by educating the parhesia to tahara and kedusha? And I want to say this is a very sensitive letter. I felt this myself. When I was growing up, we never heard the word homo, never heard the word lesbian, let alone transgender. My grandsons already, growing up, it's part of their language. I couldn't believe I would hear them discussing it. Kids of 15, 16. It's a tremendous challenge. And take a look what's happened with YU. And I have to tell you, you don't start to realize the depth of the problem. You talk about transgender, I knew very little about it until a few weeks ago. A very dear student, who's been my student for over 50 years, just like you, a very dear student, came to me, he was here in Israel, and he told me what he's going through with his most brilliant child, a daughter. And do you know what they do? They do an operation that can't be reversed. They remove the breasts, the hormones. Today, among other shanis, we discuss where should she sit in shul. He's a man, she has a beard today. And this poor girl, but I'll tell you what's worse. He consulted with experts. He himself is an expert in his field, the PhD, etc. Over 40% of the women who do these operations later regret it. And they can't do anything. I hold these doctors for like Mengele. They should be held responsible. And this is made normative. And we have rabbis. If you saw Friday's Jerusalem Post, I don't know why we don't have an English newspaper that believes in Torah. Why don't we have? No, Mishpacha is not a newspaper and it doesn't have pictures of women. That's what's wrong with it. But it's not a newspaper. We don't have a daily newspaper in English. I don't have to read English. I read Hebrew. But that's not a... But I read the Post because I teach Anglos. I want to know what's going on in the world. I can't believe... Did you see Friday's Post? At least rabbis... Mismachim from the Vardic, not talking while you were ready. Transgender, normative. It's beyond comprehension, the brainwashing. This person writing from Lakewood hit the nail on the head. Now I have to tell you, here, this is Olam Hatan. I don't know if you realize what this is. This is given out one of the freebies on Friday. It's Olam Hatan. Was established by a loan. Unfortunately, there was scandal with him. But this remains, it still carries, it's a fabulous newspaper for all of us, including teenagers, collegiate kids. Here's an article by a lady who was in America and picked up on American TV. A Texas girl is interviewed crying. She did the operation and she so regrets it, and she says the psychologist told her, "You're a boy, not a girl." What they should have told her was, "You're a tomboy, not a girl." You follow? Tomboy, all right. I have a granddaughter, my only granddaughter. Everyone else is a male in my family. She's a Tai Kuchung, I don't know what it is. She's the champion in Israel for women with awards. A wonderful neshama, but that's what, I guess because she had five brothers, she had to learn how to defend herself. But that's a tomboy. You don't realize what a tragedy we have today, and with YU, what's going on now. Our approach has to be, you can't hide sex, even if you want it today. Gerich Siddim, get married, they know nothing about sex. My revered neighbor, when the building I live in was built, when we all moved in together back in 1969, my revered neighbor was Rabbi Mendel Lewittis. Rabbi, he was in the first graduating class of Yeshiva College. Avi, what's your first graduating class? 1932. Rabbi Mendel Lewittis was a very important rabbi in Montreal, came in Aliyah, and he was in Gare. Whenever they got married, they had a problem not knowing how to do sex. They would send them to Rabbi Lewittis. He was their consultant, because he later wrote a book on marriage, a fabulous book, published by Jason Aronson at that time. And they get married, they don't know anything. We can't afford that luxury today. Their attitude was, do what comes naturally. We can't afford that luxury today. But I have to tell you, beginning with seventh grade, I would begin chinuch, sex, first of all, mutual respect, especially for males to respect women. This attitude, I was just told that there was some talk on Talmud Torah, and the speaker speaking mentioned that today women have to study Torah like men. And the males in the audience laughed at him, and with such an attitude of a put-down, has to be respect. Women today, fortunately or unfortunately, I don't know if we should be happy with it, but women today are mamish like the Eshet Chayil. Read Mishle, read the Eshet Chayil. Do you really want your wife to be an Eshet Chayil? My wife is furious with Eshet Chayil. Out of the house, working, the man sits in the town square and talks politics and Retten Lernen with his friends. That's the goal. Nechama Leibowitz said to me, is this really the ideal? We were, you know, we were eating together at Machon Gold one Friday evening, and we're sitting together. I knew Nechama very well. That was a unique lady, a Litvish Talmud Chacham, but she would have given it all away had she been able to have children, quote, end quote. I would have given away all my learning if I could have only had my own children. But what an individual. Did you study with her here in Israel? So you know what I'm talking about. So Nechama, is that the, what we have to deal with realistically. Women today can do everything. You have to, and we want them to retain their femininity. We want them to retain that mystique, that feminine mystique. We want marriage to be marriage. We want sex to be sex. And we have to educate as best we can, not to fear, but pride and understanding, respect, mutual cooperation. Ah, oh, what a healthy marriage, the joy it can bring to life. That's all I can answer. I have no secrets. I spoke one whole year in the Kollel on working out a happy marriage. I advise my dear student in Lakewood, pick up those shiurim. I believe they're on yutorah.org. It must be about 20 years ago when I gave those lectures. But this has to be our attitude. Let me end off with this part of the lecture with one little anecdote in this building. You all know I prepare my lectures Yesh Me'ayin, and I Xerox everything. We never waste time. As I've told you more than once, with the Rav, at least 20% of the shiur was wasted. We had no Svarim, and we had always one kid who sat on near the door, and the Rav would tell him, bring me a Rambam Hilchos Malachim, you know, he had to run up to the Gottesman Library. Bring me a Sefer Mitzvah, he had to run up to the Gottesman Library. But I Xerox. Whenever I Xerox downstairs, it's Kedei Reh Devei Shutvei. It's too many people using it, they have things around. So I always am curious, I see, what's this? And I figure out what to do with it. It could be I have to put it into this one's box, that one's box. So I see downstairs a lecture on Hilchot Tzniut. Fainted. I was ashamed even to read part of it to my wife. I said, look at this generation. But you gotta...
I think this was intended to be private between the Chassam teachers and...
I hope so. But let me make my point. I'm not revealing any names here. But introduction, and the person who wrote it, I happen to know some of these rabbis. They tell you who said it, who he heard it from, this. And I have to say, I couldn't get over it. You get beyond the first page, the most intimate details of marriage spelled out. And you know something? In our generation, it's important. Wife, husband, owner, woman, a woman's physical needs, sexual needs, very different than a man. I don't want to go into more detail, lo na'im li, but Yomo says, and I hope he's correct, that this was not a public lecture, but it was between a given to a chatan and kala. And I was very impressed what they can talk about, what they can instruct, what they can inform. And this is the generation, I'll use the words, kol hakavod, my generation. If someone would have given a talk like this or written a paper like this, I don't think it would have been accepted. In this generation, when the world is so filled with idol worship, of self-worship, and we know it all, and we count, and we are God. Do you know that when you apply to Social Security, you have a right to choose male or female? I couldn't believe it was written up in all the Israeli newspapers. Here, when you give blood, there was a tremendous scandal this past year because Bennett enabled people who enmity towards religion, Lamishinim, Al-Pitikva, is overwhelming. And they gave the Minister of Health to a guy named Horowitz, so distant from any understanding of Torah. And when you go to give blood, they ask not father, mother, one parent, two parent. You know what I'm talking about? There's a big scandal here. The yeshiva boys boycotted, wouldn't give blood. Finally, they now have a special form, if you insist, where it says mother or father. But can you imagine how degraded we are? We're God. We can determine anything. No holds barred. Shema Yisrael. Horowitz is Elokeinu. Eloheinu, I should say. Horowitz is one. You worship yourself. You are the ethics. You are the morals. And this is the education we should give. Can we succeed? Absolutely. We've raised, despite all the difficulty, what a generation of B'nai Torah, particularly in the state of Israel, Yehuda V'Shomron. You meet people filled with dedication, commitment, Mesirat Nefesh. You have it elsewhere. But I met a Jew, let me end off this part of the lecture. I met a Jew in Osherad, right after Yom Kippur, I believe. And the place was mobbed. It was right after the first day of Sukkot. And I made the mistake of my life going. I figured the first day after Sukkot, Chol HaMoed, everyone is traveling, touring. And I meet this Jew standing on a line, 20 people. And we start talking, and in Israel, I always open my mouth and matchil medaber b'ivrit. Ani meniach kol echad medaber b'ivrit, lo anglo-saxi, ani chosei. And he answers me in English accented, and he tells me he's an Olech Hadash, and he's over 70, and he was born in France. They ran away from Eastern Europe, born in France, native language Yiddish, French, and he's lived in England for over 50 years, and he studied in Tells in America. And, we got involved in a whole discussion about Tells and Reb Mattel Katz, and I couldn't believe, you know, that I knew all this. I told him, I'm from YU, but in my research, I have a doctorate in Torah history, Baruch Hashem. And we became quite friendly. And here's a Jew with a big black kippah, buying in Osherad because of the Shemitah problem. And he says to me, I've lived in Israel now a number of months, and I've concluded the only place you find real dedication is in Yehuda V'Shomron. I said, I can't believe what you're saying. You're quoting a guy named Rav Rakefet. Then he asked me, you know, what do you do? So I told him, look, if I would answer you what I do, you won't believe me. You think I stepped off the wall. I said, when you get home, Google my name. All right? Then you'll decide whether Google lies. I didn't realize he's going to pull out a little iPod, and he Googled me right there. Oh, my gosh. He didn't know what to do for me. But the story, the funny part is, I didn't realize. He explained to me, we're waiting on a line that's also disabled and old people. So I noticed people are constantly breaking into the line. So he tells me, yeah, they're breaking into the line and they're showing over 80 patur mitur. You don't have to wait online. So finally I get to the cashier and a woman is waving, and the cashier's a firm guy, a good guy. She's waving this card. I pull out the card and I say to him, listen, ani gam b'matzav hazeh, ani choshev l'fi amareh, ani yotzat yotem mevugam imen. I know, if she would be older than me, meila, I'd say, okay, ladies first. But boy, after waiting a half hour, I made my case. Okay, now let us go a drop further, me, and let us move on. And I apologize for having to deal with such sensitive matters, but if Lakewood has its problems, we all have that problem. Okay. Now, I want to tell you a story that has tremendous halachic bearing on the next question that will deal with Reb Menashe Klein. And it's a true story. There was a wonderful rabbi in Queens, Rabbi Fabian Schoenfeld. Okay, I'm sure you all know the name. I trust you know part of the family. A good deal of it lives in Israel. I knew Fabian very well. I write about him in the Suvi era. The story with the convention of Poli Aguda, and someone gets up a kanoi. They elected Fabian president, and this guy gets up and he said, what kind of name is that, Fabian Achilul Hashem? And Rav Leisa Silva gets up and says, Macher Schwein, du Amaretz, shut your mouth, you Amaretz. Who is the greatest Talmud of Rabbeinu Tam? Rabbeinu Peter. He's the one who said that you can be metami yourself to Rabbeinu Tam's coffin. He was a Kohen. If he can be called Peter, Fabian can be called Fabian. A fabulous story, which captures Reb Leisa Silver as well. So Rabbi Fabian had a son, Yoel. He should live in Yoel. He needs refuah shleima, I understand. He was in your class. He left the rabbinate. He's living in Baltimore today, I'm told, to be near his children. So Fabian had a, Yoel had a son, and there was the Brit Mila. And after Brit Mila, the Rav came. The Rav was very close to Fabian, very close in general to the Queens Mafia. I've told you more than once. The rabbis there never fought. It was a terrific thing. And they were called the Queens Mafia. The whole group there, and Rabbi Schoenfeld, certainly the most well-known among them. So the Rav comes, and now they're ready to do the Brit Mila. And Fabian said to the Rav, look, I apologize, but, you know, my son learned in Lakewood, and they do Mitzitza Bepeh. They suck out the wound after the Brit. Mitzitza Bepeh, it's called, you all know that expression. So the Rav said, you're lucky I'm more open-minded than my father and grandfather. He said, if my father was at a Brit, they did Mitzitza Bepeh, he'd walk out. My grandfather would be very upset, of Chaim. But all right, I'll sit here. And this, of course, takes us to the whole question of Mitzitza Bepeh in the year 2023. Now, we'll quote the Gemara next week what Mitzitza is about, but what is the alternative? There is a simple alternative that... how many of you are Mola? Many of you are Mola? No? I've had the Talmud, the Rabbi Kelman was a Mola, if I'm not mistaken, my Talmud, Abby Kelman. I've had other Talmudim who are Mola. There is another way to do it with a plastic straw, a mini straw. It's made specially for this, where you suck it out without touching the organ with your own mouth, with your own lips. And you do, you pull the blood out doing the mitzitza, but it's not bepeh. It's, I don't know what you want to call it, bekli, beskuchit, etc. Now, where does this problem come up? And here, why did it come up in modern times? And so much has been written. So let me begin at the beginning. To begin, first of all, in the modern world, it doesn't sound nice. You follow? The Prime Minister of Israel today, and it's criminal, well, I should use the word, it's disgraceful, that here we have a Prime Minister who didn't even graduate high school. I mean, it's beyond comprehension what can happen in politics. And created by a Jew who wears a kippah. Beyond comprehension. So his wife, who happens to be the great-granddaughter of Rav Amiel, she participated in a challah separation. Those of you who are aware what's going on in Israel, the most important preachers in the state of Israel are women, not men. And they developed with this whole concept of spirituality, they make a whole public event of Hafreshet Challah. It's a beautiful concept, you see, because baking and cooking, it's the heart of a woman, and that a woman can lead a feminine life and can be consecrated to Ribbono Shel Olam, to God, to tradition. It's a beautiful concept. My wife, coming from a firm background, she's not carried away by, but I can understand it. It's like a Talmud asked me in the Kollel years ago, he developed a Kabbalat Shabbat for kids who are, you're trying lekarev, you, with a whole band, with guitars, and lechad odi, and then you read Mizmor Shir Yom HaShabbat, you drop all the instruments. This moment on, it's Kiddushat Shabbat, you can't play instruments. So my first reaction was negative. You know, like Rav Gerelich would get hysterical. He would go, ah, the form, the master, the Chatam Sofer, he would call the instruments, davening. Then I thought about it, and I said, you know, it must be a very powerful impression that it leaves on these type of youngsters, that here lechadodi with all the instruments, and then you drop it, Kabbalat Shabbat. You with me? Do you want to say anything, Yomam? Tilim Kufnun. Oh, so you're saying that the Tilim says you pray, yeah, but that's in the Beis HaMikdash. Rabbi Yerucham would answer you, that's the Levium in the Beis HaMikdash. So you see, there's something to it. So his mother, Lapid's mother, the widow of Tommy, gave him hell. How did you allow your wife to participate in such a pagan event? Hafrashat Chala Barabim. And he answered, I couldn't believe the answer. And how did you parade me naked when I was 8 days old? But you understand, Matzitza Bepeh. So originally already the Lapids of 200 years ago had a field day attacking Brit Milah. And some of you know Avram Geiger, one of the earliest things the reformers did at that time, they abolished circumcision. Okay? Geiger abolished a reform rabbi. Later, circumcision remained, they couldn't abolish entirely the Am Yisrael, even a reformed Jew, there's something in him that would not accept it. But already, when it came to Metzitza B'Peh, Rav Samson Ful Hirsch was opposed. You don't have to do it. You can do it B'Kli. Reb Yaakov Atlan got out a whole tshuva. And you come into modern times, it's not only Reb Chaim, Reb Moshe, the Rav, many. We have a solution that's more elegant, more sophisticated, more acceptable to the Western mind where man worships himself in 2023. Ah, but 30 years ago, the problem became more widespread. Because of what happened in 1970, early 70s, at the Convention of Psychologists, Psychiatrists, until then, homosexual behavior was viewed as deviant. At that convention, psychologists got up and shut down the traditional ones, and homosexuality becomes normative. This is what's going on in YU today. We're just as good and just as normal as anyone else. You were born this way, we were born this way, we have a right, we're a woman, we're really a man. All right, this is the modern concept. As a result of that breakdown and infinitely more homosexual activity, and I have to tell you, I've said this many times and I don't want to elaborate now, from my own experience as a Rebbe 63 years, 80 to 90% of the cases of homosexuality and lesbianism that I encountered among my students, 80 to 90% had nothing to do with being inborn. It was a result of when you make it normative, then there are other factors, psychological, economic, emotional. I can give you many examples, but it's not for now. As a result of this widespread homosexuality, you have AIDS. And AIDS continues to haunt us basically until today. They haven't solved it, and they will never, I'm told, be able to solve it entirely. And I sadly have to tell you that AIDS even enters our community. I had a distant relative. He was one of the first in our community to die of AIDS. A distant relative. Maybe a fourth or fifth cousin. But when I died, the prime of life, what, how, was whispered to me. Now, when you have AIDS, venereal disease, can you do Metzitza B'Peh? And here there's a twofold danger. On one hand, the baby can be a carrier of AIDS. On the other hand, the mohel can be a carrier of AIDS. It works either way. And Rabbi Nasha Klein, Mishnah Halachot, Chelik Yud Gimel, Siman Kuf Pei Gimel. This is exactly the question he gets in 1994. Exactly the question he gets in 1994. And it involves a whole community. The tshuva is to a rav in Baltimore, but they claim an entire community of rabbanim, Orthodox rabbis, got together and they wanted to forbid doing metzitza b'peh. Everything should be done with the plastic funnel or straw. I don't know what they have, if they have a technical name in English. Ask a moho when you get back and let me know if there's a technical name for it. And do metzitza that way? And do you have to do metzitza? Why do we do metzitza? Is metzitza part of the basic chiyuv of milah? We'll see next week. And we'll see Rav Avadya. And we'll also see, at times Rav Avadya can be very naive. That Rav Menashe Klein can be very naive. I used Rav Avadya as an example because I knew Rav. He also could be naive. He said tzaddikim, so they don't realize. He thinks that in our world there's no AIDS. What baby can have AIDS? What mole can have AIDS in our world? And how alavai he would be correct. You'll also see next week, Be'ezrat Hashem, Rabbi Yoshev's correspondence with Rabbi Menashe Klein. Very, very fascinating. So first of all, I want to, what did we do today? Vosom Negetanheim, the Rabbi always ended up every shir reviewing. Then he would say what he wants to do next week and what you have to prepare. If he got, David, if he got to 20% of what he wanted to do, we were okay, you follow? But, you know, you think in advance, Baruch Hashem. All right, so what did we do? Today was a very fascinating tshuva. It's very fascinating how he goes in. He could have ended at the end of one-third of the tshuva, but he knew the Gemara in Shabbos. And then he knew the Gemara's in Nida and Shabbos again. And the people want to know, and people did know. And the Gemara gives you an etza, how to establish the sex. Well, that goes against the Medrash Rabbah. So he ends off, HaBotech B'Shem Chesed Yisov Avenu. But you see from the tshuva that Me'eka Hadin, he felt you could do an ultrasound B'Sman Hazeh, no question about it. And Kvodo B'Mkomo Munach, it hit the nail on the head. You can do it, but he ends off, you're asking the question, you felt Boteach Bashem, nothing wrong, Boteach Bashem. I also went sideways and spoke about sex and sex education, and very moved by that letter from Lakewood. And I see the problems with my own eyes. I mean, imagine in commentators so many pages written about lesbians and homosexuals and transgender. And the article on the transgender is critically important. This is a non-Jewish girl. They called me a boy. I should have said tomboy. And they destroyed her life. And she went public on television in the United States. We introduce very briefly what we're going to do next, dealing with mitzitza b'peh, which is a topic that anyone in the rabbinate, it's something you face halacha l'maisa. With my own many great-grandchildren, k'nayin hara, no one ever asked me and I never got involved, but I can tell you some of the britot were mitzitza b'peh and some were mitzitza with the kli. It's my grandchildren making decisions or grandchildren-in-law. And you got to know, as a great-grandfather, to keep your mouth closed at times. That's also part of life. Are there any questions from the wonderful students sitting in front of me? Yes?
I have a few objections to something you said an hour ago about the differences between Jews and non-Jews.
Yeah.
So Rabbi said that, I guess, Jews, we don't fight each other or don't kill each other, and by going they do. But look, you're not Rabbi, you see that we had Mamachas Yehuda, Mamachas Yisrael. They had absolutely no problem going to war with each other.
Yeah, and except your question is absolutely right, except for one thing. It was not desirable. That was a curse upon the Jewish people. We're talking the ideal. And the ideal is, you see Kibbutz Galyut here, there's never been a miracle like this Kibbutz Galyut that we have now. And Jews risked their lives. What we brought out of Ethiopia, think for a minute, what we brought out of Russia, what we're doing today in the Ukraine. You have any idea what's going on?
Yeah, I agree. It's beautiful. What the state of
right, but what you're talking about is not the ideal. We're talking when Jews, like the American Jews, spit in Israel's face. What do they care about Israel today? Did you see the articles in Friday's Post? If Smotrich and Ben-Gvir are going to be ministers in the next government, it's the end of the state of Israel. America's going to break all relations with us. Who are we talking about? I don't know what's going to happen Wednesday, but right now I'm scheduled to meet with Smotrich here, and he's going to interview me, and I'm going to come out in favor of that party. So that's what I'm voting, but everyone has choice. I only ask, vote for a religious party. Likud is wonderful, but it will not, it'll protect religion to a certain degree, but it won't institute to keep the status quo even better, if you understand what I'm saying.
I'm just saying that Jews, historically, yeah, we don't have a better record of not fighting each other than
Baruch Hashem, we'll put it your way, but when I tell you the story of 1944 and when Chaim Sabato tells his story, it says something very, very big and important. Norm, what's up?
This will have deal. One time when I was in sales, we were going to go away for vacation. My boy says, what are you going to do for Shabbos? So I said, well, you know, we have friends, but now we go to the synagogue. I'm Catholic. I would never think of going to a church on Sunday and saying, can anybody take me home for lunch?
Yeah, he doesn't know that here we have in shul's committees that every week, Baruch Hashem.
He said, aren't you afraid somebody's going to rob you or come in?
Right. Mika Amcha Yisrael. I'll tell you even worse. A family just bought one of the apartments in my building. I cannot tell you what they paid. You're looking, the Rebbe is a millionaire. You understand what I'm saying? And I've said it more than once. Anyone who owns an apartment in Jerusalem today is a millionaire. All I can derive from that is having something worth $1 million or more is nothing today. I don't know, but I can't sell it. I can't move. I have to be near Gris. I have to be able to live. I'm too old to start commuting for the sake of argument, Bethel or Shiloh, etc. So they're visiting the apartments. A family, wonderful family from Flatbush, and they came for Yom Kippur, Sukkot. They went back last night. Erev Shabbos, in the hallway of our building, on the bench that they put in for myself and my wife to sit when we wait for the automatic elevator Shabbos, it's a beautiful pair of tefillin in the case. And the lady who saw it didn't know what to do. She put it on the WhatsApp of the building. Who? What? I looked. I recognized the name. It's the new family. So I took it upstairs, left it outside their door, and I left the note on the bench, the tefillin, because I was... Then I found out the story. The kid, they were in a rush because they're going home. They had to go to the kotel to say goodbye. He figured to leave it there, you know. Trust the building. I said that you can trust the neighbors, I assure you. But workmen come in. Arabs come in. You know, who's painting? Electricity, all this. You can't leave a pamphlet worth $1,000 or more. So you see, it's what you just said, that our track record is better. But all right, let me, tomorrow morning is a sheer second to none. We're continuing with Satma, and we're moving now. We're moving into high society. So let me sign off here. I want to thank everyone from the bottom of my heart of honoring me with their presence. And to me, again, in health and happiness, das vidanya. Open it to the world, please. Does anyone have a question across the world? Yeah.
Rebbe.
Yeah.
Recording stopped.
Yeah.
I just wanted to, what you just said about American Jews, if you can find it, I can try to send you a link. A commentary magazine. I'm not sure why you're calling. about the Jewish studies professors in America, what he goes up against. Because, you know, he's from YU, he's religious, and how they don't want to talk about religion, they don't want to talk about Israel, like, they don't want to talk about anti-Semitism. He brought it up, they're like, oh, no, Jews aren't being attacked, and Israel is terrible. It's a whole piece, he's writing about his colleagues, it's pretty great. But he said 80% of them don't know how to read Hebrew.
Exactly. If you read the post, who's talking?
You are.
There's an echo in the room where you are.
If you read the post on Friday, you have to rip Kree. I couldn't believe what I was reading, and Yitz Greenberg, I can't believe what he writes. The man. He's a graduate of Nevada, don't blame YU, but I can't believe it. It's like Smotrich and Ben Gvir, Avi Avot HaTuma. So I told someone made a comment to me quoting the miracle break off relations. So I said, wonderful. Oh, I know it was someone big in the OU, shaking in his pants. I said, wonderful. Am levadod yishkon. Ubein goyim lo yitchashev. Baruch Hashem. America will break off
with
us.
Listen,
I grew up in the lap of Meir Kahana. You haven't read my writings. I'm mekayim what the Gemara says, palginin dibura. Ben Gavir, over the years he's maturing. Give him a chance to do tshuva. And not everything in Kahana was terrible. Russian Jews would have kissed the ground every time I mentioned the name Meir Kahana. He put that on the agenda. Let's be honest. All right, Meir, you know my hashkaf is some things I accept, some things I don't. I've spoken about it. I give covet. Every Arab is a human being. But when he lifts up a stone, he loses the right to be a human being. That's what I have to say. I never heard Meir say killer. He tried to push them out. That's not realistic. You can't push the Arabs out. They're here. But they have to know this is a Jewish state and that we're here to stay.
Yeah, but Ben Gvir is not just a Cain supporter, he's a Baruch Goldstein supporter.
Baruch Goldstein is the greatest tragedy ever. If I had Baruch in front of me, I'd slap his face and tie him up. I know his family, I know his mother's still alive, his sister was a Talmidam of Heket of mine. Who do you think had the first two brachot at Baruch Goldstein's marriage? It's not a guy named Aaron Rakefet. But to make Baruch Goldstein a hero, if that's, I know they say Ben Gvir has picture up, terrible mistake, 1,000%. But tell me, to have a government that's in favor of chametz on Pesach in every hospital, that's not a terrible mistake? Please, to have a government, Michaeli, trains, buses, Shabbos, thus get done in Levin, the granddaughter of Kastner who saved the Satmar Ruf. Oh my gosh. Now, which is worse, Baruch Goldstein or Chometz or Shabbos? I'll let you decide. But as far as I'm concerned, they cancel out each other. But what do we have against Smotrich? Ribbono shel Olam. Okay. But
in your list the availability of Am Yisrael, Gush Katif is perhaps the greatest since the state of Israel. Al-Falana and Gush Katif.
I agree wholeheartedly. Gush Katif is beyond comprehension what Sharon did and what Olmert did. And Olmert walks freely. How the man doesn't sit in jail, how many Jewish lives he killed, how many billions of dollars we've had to spend to defend ourselves because of Gush Katif and the rockets. But all right, I'm only one person and I'm a Talmud of the Rav. I can never tell you except what I'm saying. There are other points of view. Okay, Rakefet has his point of view. Other points of view. Hashtia kedat ein ones. We'll put it that way. Yeah.
Rebbe, you know, what's his name? Michaeli's boyfriend. He's the late night comedian, Schlein.
Right.
So he hates Lapid. He thinks Lapid's an idiot. So he's always attacking him. Yeah, of course, you know, his girlfriend is the head of labor, you know, so, but he has this really funny one where he shows how Lapid always contradicts himself. So he shows when they threw the Jews out of Gush Katif, Lapid was like, wonderful, throw them out, treat them terribly. And a year later, he's at some right-wing conference, and he says, Oy, we treated them so terribly. We should have greeted them when they left with blankets and hot soup, because when they were being thrown out, to show them how much we cared for them. And then they go back to Schlein, and Schlein goes, but they threw them out in August.
They threw them out. But by the way, I have to say about her, her paramour, it's not a boyfriend. It's a, she's a she's a concubine. Call it correctly. She's a pilegish. She's a pilegish, a concubine. And you have to give them credit. She doesn't sleep around. He doesn't sleep around. It's not the avodah zarah of the general North Tel Aviv crowd. Rav Henkin, you're right. He felt civil marriage. I've lectured extensively on that, and I've written on that too. But anyway, coming back here, I give him credit that he said the kitzes shulchan aruch makes him uncomfortable. He hates it. I couldn't believe he knows that there's a kitzes shulchan aruch that shows us that he had to be raised properly. And I hope the day will come that they'll both find their way back to the kitzes shulchan aruch. And if they have a problem with the kitzes shulchan aruch, they can take Rav Melamed's shulchan aruch, which maybe is more up to date for the Israeli scene. All right, I want to thank everyone again. I want to mention tomorrow we're back to Satma. And next Monday, I'll end this year a little earlier, and I'm going to interact with Yosef HaTzadik Mendelovich. So there's a lot happening, and I hope I survive my meeting with Smotrich, etc., and the elections, and you see they're trying to pull off the signing with Lebanon a day or two before the elections. It's amazing how blatant Biden and Lapid are in what they're doing, and I hope the Israeli population has seichel and sense this time, because it's a pain in the neck to have to vote every few months. All right, until we meet again in health and happiness, das vidanya.